Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. Last year, we recorded another in our series of The Adventures of Sam Spade, starring Ivan Curry as Sam. Coming up is The Jury Duty Caper. Who would have thought you'd find our favorite private investigator impaneled on a jury?
American Radio Theater presents a lost show from the days of old-time radio, including the original commercials. Produced by Joy Jackson and directed by Dave Leese, here's Ivan Curry as Sam Spade, Detective.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
I'm through with jury duty, sweetheart. Through, do you hear?
Oh, Sam, is the trial finished?
Trial's been called off, sweetheart.
Something go wrong?
Nothing serious. DA merely discovered he was trying the wrong man for the wrong crime.
Thanks to juror Sam Spade, no doubt.
Well, who else? Who else? Stay where you are, sweetheart. I'll be right down with the lowdown on the jury duty caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, The Hard-Boiled Private Eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with The Adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for Men.
Why is Wild Root Cream Oil such an outstanding favorite with so many well-groomed people? Because it's the outstanding different hair tonic. Among all the leading hair tonics, only Wild Root Cream Oil contains lanolin. Only Wild Root Cream Oil gives you that neat, handsome Wild Root look. So get the big economy size bottle of Wild Root Cream Oil at your drug or toilet goods counter. And ask your barber for Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
And now, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Your pants!
No, they're frozen. Bring your book, Effie.
The safest place in the world, a jury box. What happened? Did you fall out of it?
Dictation, Miss Perrine, when you have the time.
What kind of a jury were you serving on? Couldn't the judge keep order?
This one goes to the DA's office, Effie.
Oh, they called and said to forget it. What does that mean?
That's justice, Effie. No more than justice. To the DA's office from Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Gentlemen, I did not ask to serve on your jury. I was summoned. I went down to the hall, beefed to the court clerk, insisted that I was prejudiced against the defendant. I even told about my 100-proof bottle. Still, I became Samuel Spade, juror number 11, and was assigned to criminal court part 2. I found my way in the jury box along with the other 11 good men and true.
May it please your honor, Mr. Foreman and gentlemen of the jury, the defendant, Clarence Rocky Morrison, has been indicted by the San Francisco County Grand Jury of murder in the first degree in charge of having killed and murdered Albert Fogarty with premeditation and deliberation with malice aforethought.
Well, the prosecutor went on like that for an hour or so. It seemed the defendant, Rocky Morrison, had thrown a couple of slugs into Albert Fogarty in a fit of temper. Fogarty had been a contractor with a few side interests, ranging from sand and gravel to control of the policy market. Rocky Morrison was a small-time gunsel employed by Big Louie Havoc, an ex-Chicago boy, who owned a controlling interest in more of the local businesses that didn't pay taxes. After the indictment was read, the state called its first witness. I took one look at her and decided jury duty could be interesting.
Do you swear to tell the truth, so help you God?
I surely try.
Take the stand.
Thank you, I'm sure. Excuse me, just got out of the hospital. Pneumonia, double. Sorry, I'm sure.
Your name?
Doris DeSoto.
Is that your real name or an alias?
A what?
An assumed name.
Oh, an alias. That's my stage name.
You're an actress by profession?
I'll thank you to keep your insinuendos to yourself.
Oh, the prosecutor means that's what you do for a living, Miss DeSoto.
Oh, well, why didn't he say so? I'm a receptionist. At least I was. I just got out of the hospital and...
Yes, you mentioned that. You say you are a receptionist. By whom are you employed?
Blue Bottle Bar and Grill, Columbus Avenue. I was the third receptionist from the right as you go in, and I would have been promoted to the first if I hadn't been in the hospital. I had pneumonia, double. Sometimes I get these shooting pains, you know, and right about here, and they run all the way down to my vaccination scar, and, you know, you can see how much weight I lost, you know.
The witness will please remember that she is here to give testimony and is not an exhibit.
I'm sorry, I'm sure.
You were acquainted with the defendant, Clarence Rocky Morrison?
Rocky? Sure. He used to come into the Blue Bottle all the time. You know, to collect in that, you know?
To collect what?
Your Honor.
Yes, Mr. Snyder.
And that was when I first noticed, the first time, the defense attorney was Marty Snyder. Big Louie's mouthpiece, one of the smartest criminal lawyers in the country. He walks up to the judge's bench, took up a space facing the jury, and gave the spectators a good view of his profile before he spoke.
Your Honor, as counsel for the defense, I object to the prosecutor's line of questioning as incompetent, irrelevant, and immaterial.
Objection sustained. You will proceed with more caution, Mr. Prosecutor.
Your Honor, it was my hope to obtain testimony from the witness linking the defendant to certain rackets or financial operations, and thus to prove the motive behind the murder of Albert Fogarty.
That's a lie. He's trying to black my client's character.
You may continue with your questioning, Mr. Prosecutor. Sit down, Mr. Snyder.
I have only one more question to ask Ms. DeSoto. What happened in the Blue Bottle Bar and Grill on the night of February the 2nd?
Well, I was drinking a hot rum toddy at the end of the bar, and Mr. Fogarty came in and asked for Gladys.
That is Gladys Ray?
Yes, that's her stage name, Gladys Ray. So Gladys went into a booth and ordered some drinks and like that, and then Rocky came in straight out of a weed patch somewhere, honestly, and he said something in a real low voice to Mr. Fogarty, and they all went into the office, the three of them, and then there were shots and that, and Gladys screamed and came running out and said that Rocky had killed Mr. Fogarty.
Objection! Here's the evidence!
Your witness, Mr. Snyder.
No cross.
If your honor pleases, I would like to call my next witness, Miss Gladys Ray.
Gladys Ray to the stand. State's witness, Gladys Ray, to the stand, please.
Your Honor.
Yes?
The witness, Gladys Ray, has disappeared. Under the circumstances, the prosecution is forced to ask for a postponement of the trial until this key witness, the only witness to the crime, can be located.
Postponement denied. The trial will proceed.
It proceeded. It might proceed until next Christmas. This was an appalling prospect. At 9 p.m., I was locked into a room with juror number 3, a gentle little man called R. Crosley Hooper. Mr. R. Crosley Hooper came equipped to battle every germ that science had ever discovered.
Oh, yes, Mr. Spade. One can't be too careful. You should use this spray on your throat.
No, thanks. I'll just gargle with bourbon. What's that oilskin sack?
This? My sleeping bag. Always use it when I travel. The sheets in hotels, you know. See? Climb in like this.
But doesn't that crackling keep you awake?
You get used to it. Besides, I take a sleeping pill. Here, have one.
Mr. Hooper put a sleeping pill in his glass of water. I took 2 pills. And I dropped them into a glass of water. Mr. Hooper's. 10 minutes later, R. Crosley Hooper was in what is coyly known as the Land of Nod. 15 minutes later, I was tiptoeing cautiously down the fire escape. Just as I arrived on the fourth floor landing, a window flew up. And a nylon-encased leg emerged therefrom. I recognized the vaccination scar. It was Doris DeSoto, the state's prize exhibit of the day. Going out for a breath of air, Mr. Soto?
Eek! Hey, who are you?
I'm on the jury, $3 a day. What are they paying you?
Listen, you won't tell on me, will you?
We'll make a deal. You won't tell on me, I won't tell on you.
Say, that's right. You're illegal, too. Listen, maybe you can help.
Maybe I can. Well, it's like this. I don't like serving on a jury. Pay is poor, seats are very hard, and my business will come to a bad end unless I can find that missing witness and get this trial over with.
All right, come on. First we'll call on Eloise.
We lowered ourselves down into the alley back of the hotel via a painter's scaffold, which was suspended from the roof in the rear of the building. 25 minutes later, we were climbing Russian Hill, and I chimed the half hour by pushing a doorknob.
Good evening.
Ah, hello, Eloise. How's tricks?
Hello, Eloise.
If you're from the police, I'd like to see your warrant.
Well, I'm not from the police, so I don't need any. But if you're smart, you'll talk. Hiding out a state's witness in a murder trial is a serious offense.
Who are you?
My name is Spade. I'm a private detective.
Who planted you in that jury? Marty Snyder?
Maybe.
Well, you can tell Marty from me that I'm not hiding Gladys here, and I wish he'd stop sending people around here to snoop. Now get out of here, both of you.
Listen, Eloise, you've got to help me.
Please go, or I shall call the police and have you both arrested. Good night.
Now you've spoiled everything. I have to go back and be locked up with that other witness and that.
Not if you're smart.
What do you mean?
Gladys Ray?
I wish you wouldn't say that name out loud. It makes me nervous. Big Louie Havoc found out that you were asking for her.
I'll handle Big Louie. Where do we go next?
Gee, you're not scared of anything, are you? What's your given name?
Sam.
Well, Sam, there's Ruthie's down lower on Leavenworth. You might try there.
Leave us, not delay. On to Ruthie's.
Hello, you. Huh? Doris, where'd you come from? I thought you were down in the blue bottle.
I've been sick. This is Sam Spade.
Well, come right in. Now, you just tell Ruthie all about it, dearie.
Well, I was in the hospital, double pneumonia, and I shouldn't ought to be out now. I got these shooting pains, you know.
Oh, drink this, dear. It'll help you. Oh, pardon me. Say when, Mr. Spade?
Just to the top of the glass.
Do you two meet in a hospital?
No, he's in the jury, and I'm a witness. Isn't that the limit? And we're both A-W-O-L.
Now, isn't that cunning?
And we're looking for Gladys on account of the trial going forever. Ruthie, we've just got to find her.
Get out.
Ruthie, did we say something wrong?
Get out. You're trying to ruin me. Who sent you here, Big Louie? I told Marty Snyder she wasn't here and I was leveling. You come here like this, you'll get me knocked off. Now get out.
The rest of the way was all downhill. Down Leavenworth to Turk Street, cross Turk to Mason, and back to Columbus. Finally, we got somewhere in the neighborhood of North Point.
It was right along here somewhere. I know it was.
Yeah, well, what's the street number?
Would you mind stopping just a minute? I got that shooting pain again. I shouldn't ought to have come out like this.
We'll catch a taxi back to the hall. Here, lean on me.
This is the place, right here with the brick front.
Sure, you will feel well enough to go on.
Sure. I'm okay. What's that?
It's okay. It's a truck backfire.
What do you want?
We're looking for Gladys Ray.
You the law?
This young lady is her sister. She just came into town. She wants to find Gladys.
What's the matter with her? She's sick?
I've been in hospital. Double pneumonia. I get these pains. Listen, we walked a long way. If Gladys is here, please don't tell us any lies.
Up the stairs. Big Louie Havoc's office. First door to your left.
You mean she's here?
Sure. Go on up. She's expecting you. The door is unlocked.
Thanks. Can I have my wallet back now?
What's that?
It's in your apron pocket there.
Now, how did it get there? $5. Take it.
Thanks. Come on, Doris. Can you make it?
I'm okay.
That's just what I was thinking. Come here.
Gee, you're nice.
Come on. The shabby, rickety-looking door swung open, and we walked into another world. Streamlined office furniture, indirect lighting, no windows, but you could smell the air conditioning. Door clicked shut behind us, and I wheeled around. The shabby wooden door that opened off the hallways was backed with a layer of steel armor plate and covered in green baize. There was no knob or lock on the inside of Big Louie's office, and you couldn't have slipped a razor blade into the crack around it. No baseboards, no openings, just a couple of air conditioning vents about the size of my head. Then Doris leaned on me.
Oh, Sam, Sam.
Take it easy, sweetheart. You're okay, remember?
Sam, would you kiss me again?
Sure.
Don't let go. Hold on to me.
Hey.
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything. I was afraid you'd take me back to the hospital. I was so sure we'd find Gladys here. Is it very bad, Sam?
I don't know, sweetheart. It's small caliber.
Oh, it is bad. It is bad.
She held on for a split second, her nails digging into my coat sleeve, and then all at once she went as limp as a rag doll there on my arms. I carried her over to the couch and made sure of what I already knew. Poor little Doris DeSoto was a very dead doll. I looked at my hand, and there was blood on it. I reached in my overcoat pocket for a handkerchief, and my hand closed on cold metal. It was a beautiful little .25 caliber automatic known in the trade as a belly gun. Light enough to be planted in my overcoat pocket by the landlady while she was lifting my wallet, but powerful enough to kill. I found a bottle of bourbon in the desk drawer and poured myself a slug of it. An hour later, the bottle was empty, but I was still no nearer to the answer. All I knew for sure was that because a man named Big Louie Havoc did, or did not want, a man named Rocky Morrison to take the rap for the murder of a man named Albert Fogarty, and a girl named Gladys Ray did, or did not want to testify, Doris DeSoto was dead, and I was framed with a murder weapon.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade.
Now, here's important news on good grooming. Better than 4 out of 5 users prefer Wild Root Cream Oil to all other hair tonics. Here is news and even more conclusive evidence that Wild Root Cream Oil is, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. So if you want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead, socially and on the job, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? The results were amazing. Better than 4 out of 5 said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. And no wonder. It gives you the advantage that men consider most important. Wild Root Cream Oil grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves annoying dryness, and removes loose, ugly dandruff. What's more, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil is the only leading hair tonic that contains lanolin. That's like the oil of your skin. So ask for Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
And now, back to jury duty. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
The more I thought about it, the madder I got. I don't like any murder, but a stupid murder makes me boil. And nobody who knew Doris DeSoto well enough to kill her would have anything but a stupid reason for doing it. I put my overcoat over her body and went back to casing Big Louie Havoc's office-type trap. Nothing there but a desk calendar. The month showing on the calendar was January 1943. This was Big Louie's hideout. There'd be some simple way to unlock the door from the inside. And, of course, there was. I ran my hand along the under edge of the desk. There was a button there. Now, I pushed it. Naturally, the door swung open.
Who's that? What are you doing up here?
I want some answers, and I want them fast. I haven't got much time.
I stand mute. I know
who told you to slip this gun in my pocket? Where's Big Louie Havoc?
Don't you yell at me.
You old hag, I ought to cut your fingers off at the knees. Secret rooms, gangsters' hideouts, a girl murdered on your doorstep. Where's your phone? I'm calling the cops.
It's out of order. And besides, we don't have
where is
any
it?
Phone. Okay, son, you got me bluffed. Can I trust you to keep me out of it?
Where's Big Louie?
I ain't seen him since 43. Snyder says he's on ice somewhere.
So why did you tell me Gladys Ray was up there?
Well, ain't she?
No, she ain't. Now tell me where she is, or I will tear your wig off.
Don't you contradict me, young man. I said she's up there, and I mean it. I seen her. She come in with Snyder. He says he wants to keep her on ice for a while. I ain't moved away from the lace curtain since. Lessen she disappeared into the woodwork, she's in that room.
Now listen, Granny.
Now, before you go flying off the handle again, go back and take another look.
So I did. I ripped up the carpet a strip at a time. Nothing there. But under the desk, I did find something. A switch box sunk in the concrete. Okay, I pried it open and looked inside. It was an ordinary type electric switch, and it said on it, in English, on and off. It was on, so I turned it off. I waited for something to happen. Nothing did except a kind of deathly quiet still settle over the room. I looked up the air conditioning vent. A little ribbon of crepe paper on the grill was still fluttering the breeze. Took another look at the switch. Just under the on-off part of it, there was a knob with some numbers around it. I blew some of the dust off. It was a thermostatic control, and the numbers were figured in degrees below freezing. I remember what the old lady had said about Marty Snyder wanting to keep Gladys on ice for a while, and a rather horrible thought crossed my mind. And then I hear thumping on the other side of the wall. I edged along it, my ear flush with the concrete. Where are you? Can you hear me?
Help me. I'll freeze to death.
How do I get through the wall?
The lights. The lights.
Which lights? They're all the way around the room.
The lights right over your head.
Well, I looked up. The lights were concealed behind the molding that ran near the ceiling. I stood up on a chair to get a better look. I lost my balance and grabbed at the molding to steady myself. Instead of steadying me, it carried me with it all the way to the floor. A whole 4-foot section of concrete wall disappeared into the floor, and a blast of refrigerated air roared out at me. The cold room was half the size of Big Louie Havoc's office, and stashed inside it was the reason for Big Louie's elaborate icebox. Enough nitroglycerin and detonating caps to crack every safe in the city. And huddled up against a pile of crates was a very cold blonde. Her face and hands were blue and her teeth were chattering, but she still seemed afraid to come out.
Who are you?
Come on, never mind that now. We'll talk when you get you thawed out.
But wait, we can't just leave him there.
Here, put this coat around you. Leave who in there?
It's so terrible I can't even talk about it. Go and look for yourself behind that bunch of boxes.
I went and looked. I thought at first it was a great wax dummy, but it wasn't. It was Big Louie Havoc. If he had been in there 4 days or 4 years, he wouldn't have looked any different, but from what I hadn't heard of him in the past 4 years, I settled for that. I left him there. Gladys was beginning to show signs of life. She'd found a bottle of whiskey in the desk drawer and held it steady enough to get a drink out of it. Here, come on, let me help you. You'll break those beautiful white teeth.
Thanks. Hey, who's that over there on the couch? Looks like Doris.
Yeah.
She asleep?
Yeah, let her alone. She's had a hard day.
Didn't she testify at the trial?
Oh, yeah, she testified.
What's she doing out?
She was worried about you, Gladys.
I just couldn't get up there and testify against Rocky Morrison. He didn't kill Fogarty. It was Marty Snyder. Marty told him if he kept his mouth shut, he'd defend him and get him off, and Big Louie would make a big shot out of him as a reward. Big Louie, that's a laugh.
How long's he been dead?
4 years, since January 43.
Marty knock him off?
No, he died natural. Heart attack. Sitting right there in this chair. And that was when Marty told me about his big idea. He said that with Big Louie dead, the organization would fall to pieces. But if we went on pretending that Big Louie was alive, and Marty acted like he was just carrying out his instructions, then everything would go on just the way it did before.
So Marty told the boys that Big Louie was hot and was going to stay on ice for a while.
Yeah, but I never knew till now how true that was.
Why are you spilling all this to me?
Because that Marty Snyder is a rat. He tried to kill me, too, just because I wouldn't say anything to put Rocky Morrison in the gas chamber. Rocky's the right guy. That's why Marty hates him so, because he's a right guy.
Have another drink. You and Rocky Morrison, huh?
Yeah, me and Rocky. So what? And I'm going to kill that Marty Snyder. Kill him dead. You hear me? I'm done.
She stopped suddenly. I heard the door open behind me. I didn't turn around, but I knew who it was by the look in her eyes. She walked straight into my arms, put her left arm around my neck, and kissed me deliberately. At the same moment, I felt her hand go in my inside coat pocket, and when it came out, she pushed me out of the way and let him have it.
I heard you were looking for her. Word's all up and down the hill. Didn't think you'd find her.
I think you got it bad, Snyder. Why didn't you get it off your chest? Just say yes, twice. Did you kill Fogarty and frame Rocky Morrison for it?
Yes.
And did you kill Doris tonight?
Yeah. I shot her from the truck.
Okay, sir. I'd like to be able to say I'm sorry for you, but I honestly can't. And these, gentlemen, are the true facts concerning the deaths of Doris DeSoto, about which I feel very bad, and of Marty Snyder, about which I feel nothing in particular. As you know, the next morning when Gladys Ray was put on the stand, the defense collapsed. I consider that I have discharged my civic duty as pertains to service as juror for the calendar year 1947. Thank you, and good night, Mr. District Attorney. Period. End of report.
Sam, it just gives me goose pimples all over. Imagine the Big Leo havoc.
Big Louie havoc, Effie.
Well, that's what I meant. In that icebox for 4 years and all that nitroglycerin around.
Yeah, it's dangerous, Effie. He could have got killed.
Well, I suppose I should be glad you got out of jury duty, Sam. But you know, the way things are, $3 a day. Now, that's sure money. Sam, and then your meals?
Oh, go home.
Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
It's true, fellows. Girls are mighty particular about the way your hair looks. They like to see it groomed the handsome wild root way, neatly and naturally. They like to see that handsome wild root look casual and well-groomed. So get that handsome wild root look with Wild Root Cream Oil. It does a wonderful job of grooming your hair. Remember, there's not a drop of alcohol in Wild Root Cream Oil, and it contains soothing lanolin. So take Wild Root's close-up test, won't you? Yes, stand in front of your mirror and take a good close-up look at your hair and scalp. You may be startled by what you see. Signs of unruly hair, dryness, or loose dandruff tell you you need Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Good night, sweetheart. All my prayers are for you. Good night.
You've been listening to a presentation by American Radio Theater of a lost show from the days of old-time radio. The Adventures of Sam Spade, Jury Duty, was produced by Joy Jackson and directed by Dave Leese. Ivan Curry was Sam Spade. In the cast, you also heard Marge Lutton as Effie, Pat McNally as the clerk, Ken Leese as the prosecutor, Beth Schlansky as Doris, Michael Mokey O'Reilly as Snyder, Dan Schindler as the judge, Kim Turner as Hooper, Kay Lutz as Eloise, Melinda Maines as Ruthie, Liz Roach as the landlady, and Mary Moore Campagna as Gladys. Greg Porter as the commercial announcer. Live sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Mike Wheeler. The episode of Sam Spade was originally broadcast on May 25, 1947. Sam Spade was played by Howard Duff and Lorene Tuttle as Effie. Written for the radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd, with musical direction by Lud Gluskin. I'm Terry Elder, your announcer, and this is American Radio Theater.
We'll be back in just a moment.
There, that ought to do it.
You know, Dave, I'm happy to help out, but did you have to dig it so deep?
Well, I've never gardened this spot before, so I had to condition the soil. I guess I got a little carried away.
It's kind of an odd-shaped plot. 3 feet by 6 feet?
Yeah, it's sort of a test bed.
I'm a bit surprised your wife hasn't been out here to yell at you.
Podcasts.
Podcasts?
Yeah, I found this website, AmericanRadioTheater.org. I downloaded a couple of podcasts and let Darlene listen to them. Well, Ken, she was hooked. The house is quieter and more peaceful than it's been in years. You know, what with her mother's illness and those podcasts, I don't think you'll see much Darlene for quite a while.
AmericanRadioTheater.org, huh?
Yep, that's the one. Thanks again for helping me out with the plot. A bed.
Anytime, Dave. Say, what are you going to plant?
I was thinking about daisies.
We return to Treasures Old and New from ART. Let's listen to some music from the 1930s. These were all on the radio at various times.
Works Progress Administration presents a program by the Federal Music Project under the direction of Dr. Nikolai Sokolov. The Manhattan Concert Band, directed by Anthony Giammatteo, opens our program with March to the Tournament by Ruperto Capi. Thank you. Victor Herbert, prolific as a composer of musical comedies and operettas, still found time to write many short lyrical pieces. The Canzonetta is one such example of Victor Herbert's unique talent as a melodist. The Canzonetta.
More than 3 million men and women have left the relief rolls and now earn their living on WPA jobs. Mayors and other local officials sponsor all WPA construction work. They understand that this work must be of a kind that can be done by the relief workers in their own communities. The quality of the work is proof that local officials have found good work to do and that the workers have done it well. Mr. Giammatteo and the Manhattan Concert Band now play the overture Stradella by Flotow in a special band arrangement.
Thank you.
Progress Administration presents a program by the Federal Music Project under the direction of Dr. Nikolai Sokolov. Today we bring you the New York Civic Orchestra, conducted by Dr. Sokolov, playing the Allegretto from Brahms' Second Symphony. This is a work that is cheerful and full of pensive grace and is frequently called Brahms' Pastoral Symphony. The Allegretto from Brahms' Second Symphony.
Thank you.
We listen now to the beautiful tone poem by Sibelius, Finlandia.
Thank you.
This program has been presented by the Federal Music Project of the Works Progress Administration.
Gee, that's all I got time for today. On December the 13th, log into radioadofthepast.org for the Old Time Radio Christmas Marathon. It's in the Fred Bertelsen Room. It's from noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, to midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific. Good fun, good shows, and prizes. Also, have a look at our website, www.americanradiotheater.org. We put up a new podcast every month. Hey, see you next time!